From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram. Mrs. Geeta comes from a family that has been associated with Swami for the last four generations. Her great-grandfather, Mr. Seshagiri Rao, came to Swami in 1943 and was the priest in Prashanthi Nilayam for many years. And her father, late Dr. Padmanabhan, was a familiar figure in Swami's ashram in Vrindavan. Having the good fortune of being born into a family with so much physical proximity to our beloved Bhagwan, her life is full of exciting and illuminating experiences. This talk was delivered as a part of the pre-world conference that was held in South Africa for the 90th birthday celebrations on the 5th of September 2015. And the topic of this talk is the Swami I grew up with. Stay tuned, dear listeners. Interspersed and after the talk, we have some soulful songs sung by overseas devotees. And at 3:30 p.m., we have the live Telugu segment, Sri Satya Sai Divya Sandesh Chari. With that, over to Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram.
My salutations at the feet of our beloved Lord, all of the senior members, office bearers who are serving Him in their capacities to the best of their abilities, brothers and sisters who are all serving Him in your own way, in your own places, at home, outside, in your job, Sai Ram, to all of you. He has put a lot of pressure on me by discussing me a lot. But don't you really admire that powerful energy of a youth who knows what path he wants to take? It's wonderful. I start with that prayer, as Dr. Reddy was saying this morning, because you've been hearing the biodatas of all these eminent people who have been speaking here. My only biodata was I was just born at the right time, probably, when there were very few people at his lotus feet, in the right home, with the right parents, who showed me the path towards him. For that, I have to thank my mother, who was my first teacher, who pointed me to him. My father, who was a strict disciplinarian, who expected us as children to follow whatever Swami said without asking too many questions. The topic given to me today was the Swami I grew up with. I grew up with Swami, no doubt. He's been a mother, he's been a father, he's been a friend, and most of all, he's been a wonderful teacher. He started out, I was a troublesome creature. He started out with a troublesome child. When my mother was expecting me, she tells me this story. Swami had told her to come to Puttaparthi before she had delivered, and said that she was going to have a girl and he would bless her before she delivered, because she had had a son who the delivery had been difficult. So my parents decided to go to Puttaparthi, my brother, a young boy at the time of 7 or 7.5. And I think I described the journeys to you. By that time there was a little bit of a road, I think. So my father decided to take my mother in this car to Puttaparthi. And everybody told him, do not take this lady who is expecting in the third trimester. It's not very safe to go to Puttaparthi at this time. But my mother insisted, because Swami had told her to come. And they went and they reached Puttaparthi, and Swami talked to them. My mother was an ardent devotee of Lord Krishna, which is why I started out this way, I guess. I have to think of her today, because all my life I have seen my mother. I believe she, from the age of 10, she's 85 now, reads the Bhagavad Gita every day. And on Krishna Janmashtami, she doesn't even eat or drink anything till she has finished reading all of those 18 chapters. So because she was an ardent devotee of Lord Krishna, Swami blessed her and said, you will have a girl, bring her back and I will name her. And while they were going back, Swami told my father, don't go back today, it's quite late in the evening. Go back in the morning tomorrow after bhajan, because the road was so bad. But my father, who was a disciplined doctor, we always had this problem with my father. He would always take us, even after we grew up and we were born and children, when we used to go to Puttaparthi, we would go on the weekend, and he would always want to leave right after morning bhajan. And Swami would always find some reasons to tell us to stay back. And my father would insist and say he would have to leave because on Monday morning he had patients. My father was a dental surgeon. So that particular day Swami said, don't go now, it is late in the evening, go tomorrow morning. My father was young and had supreme self-confidence in himself and his ability to drive. So he told my mother, this is always the problem, he's always asking us to stay back. I told you we have to return, so let's go. Along with my father, his friend had come with him, because he was the only man driving with my mother who was expecting. And even the friend who was not a devotee said, why don't we just stay back? My granduncle was there. He's telling you to stay back. Swamiji is telling you to stay back. My father said, no, this is always the problem when we come to Puttaparthi. Swami never wants us to leave. So we are going to go. Not like now, when in the end of the festival, Swami would say in his discourse, you have my blessings to leave. So they left after the 6 o'clock evening bhajan arati was over, and they started around 6:30 or 7 in the evening. And I was telling you about that Kotta Cheruvu and Brahman Palli where they had to go through in the car. There is a reservoir there even now. And I remember even as a child when we had to come to that particular turning to turn towards Puttaparthi, which is about 5 or 6 kilometers. There is a big reservoir, water reservoir, where the water is collected and the villagers use it for irrigation. There is a very sharp turn and there is nothing really, there is no barrier. And when my father left Puttaparthi with my mother and his friend and my young 7-year-old brother and me, still nowhere to be seen on the scene, it started to rain very heavily. And it is an old village rural atmosphere. There are no lights except for the headlights of the car, and it started to pour. And the car started to move, and as my father came near Brahman Palli, he didn't realize that he was driving straight instead of making a left turn, because there's no real road. It was just a mud bullock cart pathway. And he was driving straight. And if it had been another half a minute or so, he would have driven straight into the reservoir and the car would have fallen into the depth, which is about 15 or 20 feet, 30 feet down below. And suddenly, they saw a lantern and a man holding the lantern saying, stop, stop. I was remembering this when Brother Ramesh was talking about it yesterday. Stop the car, gadi apu apu, stop the car. And they saw the hand with a lantern in front of them, and my father brought the car to a halt, and his friend got out to see, and the car was sloped down towards the reservoir, but they had managed to stop. And they looked everywhere, and this man with the hand and the lantern was nowhere to be seen. So of course my mother and the friend and all, you know, took my father to task and said, you better turn the car back around to Puttaparthi. Swami told us clearly not to leave, and we left and we have put ourselves in danger. So they turned back, and I told you yesterday the car would be parked where the Ganesha is now in Puttaparthi. So we would park the car there. My father, even those 4 or 5 kilometers would take a very long time. He drove back and came and parked the car and wouldn't allow my mother to get down and go into the room where my granduncle and aunt were, because then he would get into trouble for taking this pregnant lady and coming back. So he made my mother sit in the car. He says, it's already late in the night. It's a few hours before the sun rises and Swami comes out. We are going to disappear from here. Otherwise, we are going to get into trouble. So the next morning, early next morning, Swami would come down to have coffee in my granduncle's house many times. But before Swami came down, my father left and came back. And a couple of weeks later, I was born. And my father was quite relieved that he hadn't gotten into trouble. And then, you know, usually the custom is they name the baby in the southern part of India either on the 10th or the 11th day or on the 3rd month, in the odd months. So they brought me back to Puttaparthi, and Swami at that time took my father to task and said, you disappeared in the middle of the night, and ask your grand uncle what happened. Ask your uncle what happened. And my grand uncle Sheshagiri Rao, you would have read his name in Satyam Shivam Sundaram, he told, narrated to my father how a few weeks ago when my father had come, my grand uncle used to sleep in the same room down outside of Swami's room to take care of Swami. And suddenly he heard Swami shouting, "Stop the car, stop the car." And he went into the room to see why Swami was suddenly shouting in the night to stop the car. And he saw Swami standing in the room, drenched and wet. And he had to give him another robe to change into. So he said, "Because of your stubbornness and not listening to what I told, I had to come in the middle of the night to stop the car for you and had to be drenched and I caught a cold," he said. So many years after that, he named me Gita. As I said, my mother was an ardent devotee of Lord Krishna and used to read the Bhagavad Gita. So he named me Gita. And that's how my journey began towards him, and still struggling hard to get nearer and dearer to him. You know, this name Gita, I used to complain very much about my name. Because there was one time in the school when there were 9 Gitas in the same class. We were 9 of us. If you think everybody is mistaking me, Gita Ram, between Dr. Gita Reddy, it's only 2 Gitas here. There was 9 ones. So I would constantly complain to my mother about how Swami had been very non-creative in giving me my name. There were so many beautiful names and he found this one, which was so common, so common. And my mother would say, "It is such a beautiful name," but she had no other explanation for it except that she read the Bhagavad Gita. So I remember when I was in the 4th or 5th grade, when I was really quite fed up of my name, I had a whole list of names that I wanted him to change me my name to. So we went to Puttaparthi once. Usually it used to be during Navaratri or Swami's birthday. There were only 4 festivals celebrated at that time in Puttaparthi. Swami's birthday, Navaratri, Guru Purnima and Shivaratri. All of the others have come much later. So we had gone there a little early during Navaratri especially, because we used to go and do all the volunteering work there. So whatever, everybody had a job to do. And when I was there in the room, Swami had called us all in to tell us what each of us had to do. In those days, they used to have Kunkuma Archan, what we call, they used to take Kunkum. And in the Prashanthi Nilayam Hall, while my grand uncle would read out the Devi, the 108 names of the Divine Mother and Swamis, everybody would do use the Kunkum to do Archana. And so we youngsters were given the job of supplying all the plates and the kumkum to everybody while the elders did the kumkum archana. So he had called us to give instructions. And he said, "Does anybody have questions?" And I was always the talkative one. So my hand went up and he said, "Do you have a question?" And I said, "Yes, why did you name me Gita?" He said, "Why? Don't you like it?" I said, "No, Swami, there are 9 Gitas in my class. It is so annoying because the teachers keep getting mixed up with our names." So at that time, Swami, I had hoped Gita Reddy would be here to listen to this, because I'm sure she would have enjoyed the explanation that Swami gave to the name Gita. Gita Sarame Bhagavan Sai Namamo. He said the essence of the Gita is in the very name Sai. Gita mantra me Sai bodha marmamo. The essence of the Gita is the secret of Sai's teachings. Gita dhyana me madura parama pavanam. Just thinking about the Gita is itself sweet and auspicious. Gita tattva me sakala janma sartakam. The very teachings and the essence of the Gita itself will take you across this ocean of life and death. Isn't your name beautiful? Do you still want me to change it? Well, after that, I was very proud of quoting this, though I have not imbibed a single thing that he has said. But it was wonderful to go and give this explanation of my name. But the reason I started out with that is because the first thing that Swami says is, Gita Sarame Bhagavan Sai Namamu. In Swami's name itself is the very essence of that whole Bhagavad Gita of 18 chapters that in his Krishna avatar he took the time to explain to Arjuna. And Swami gave that explanation very beautifully once. I never understood that sentence. How can the whole essence of the Bhagavad Gita be in Swami's name? So I asked him once, and this was much later in my life, Swami, you had given this. And the reason for asking, he himself brought it up in the interview room, and there was another Geeta in the interview room. Sister Geeta and I have some strange connection, I'm sure, from some past life, because every time Swami called her for an interview, he would call me for an interview along with her. In fact, when Swami did my son's thread ceremony together, I have twin sons, he said, 8 of you come, the parents of the parents, that is my parents and Mohan's parents. That was all. Only 8 of us. He didn't want any of the, not my brother, his brother, sister, nobody. Just the parents, the grandparents and the children. But he invited Geeta Reddy's family into this ceremony. And when Swami performed this thread ceremony, he took an hour and a half. He did one for the one son for 45 minutes and then for the other one. And during that time, he said, here is another Geeta, and Swami repeated this particular sloka that I just said. And he said, do you know what it means? And I asked him, Swami, how does the meaning of the Geeta, the essence of the Geeta in your name, will you please explain? And this is the beautiful explanation he gave. And it should help us all in this conference. He said, it's very easy. What is my name? Sai Baba. What does it mean? We all know, we say divine mother and father, isn't it? That is the explanation we have. So I said that, and other people in the room also gave the same answer. Swami kept saying, no, no. That's okay. What else? And of course you have to stop at that point and ask Swami, tell us Swami. So Swami said, go backwards a little bit. So let's start with Baba. B stands for B. A. Be alert. Be aware. Be aware, be alert. He said it actually in that sequence. Be aware, be alert. That's what Baba means. What does be aware, be alert means? He said there are two levels to it. Be aware first at the very physical level. Be aware. Are you careful with what you eat? Take care of this body. It's been given to you for a better purpose. Be aware of what you're doing around you. Be alert at your surroundings. Where are you? Are you in a safe place? Are you conducting yourself well? So be aware, be alert at your very physical, taking care of yourself. Then at the intellectual level, he said, be aware and be alert. Read the things. Be aware of what's going on around you. And be alert. Is there anybody who needs something? Look around you. If somebody is really coughing and you're sitting right next to them with a bottle of water, offer it to them. Be aware, be alert. I want to just tell you an incident of Swami. Swami never tells us to do anything that he has not done, and I'm sure all of us have observed at one time or the other. I was in the summer course many, many years ago, 1973. And Sri Dharmavira, who was the then governor of Karnataka state, was the chief guest to the function. And there were three chairs that had been put up on the table, just like we were sitting a few minutes ago as the panel. There was a desk, and there was no desk. There were three chairs, and there was Swami's chair in the middle, and we all knew that it was Swami's chair because it had a step stool. But the exact same kind of chair that Swami was sitting on, there were two other chairs, one for Dr. Gokok, who was organizing the whole program, the summer course. And then the other chair was for Dharmavira, who was the governor. So the chairs were set up. One chair was very specifically for Swami. We could see that it had a step stool. The others didn't. And then Swami came along with the governor, and Professor Gokok brought him up while Swami kind of moved around amongst the people. And Gokok was a very tall man. There was a chair for him. He didn't sit down. He came to the podium. He was going to make all the announcements, but he came and accompanied the governor to the chair, and then he went and stood by waiting for Swami, who was giving darshan to the students, to come. And us youngsters, we were all in the summer course, like the youngsters who were sitting there today in front of me, all of us looking at the governor and looking at each other, and we were all in a giggle fit. You know, when you're a teenager, you go into those giggle fits sometimes for no reason. But this time we had good reason, because there was the governor sitting very, very uncomfortably at the edge of his seat because his feet couldn't touch the ground. He was a very short man. And you have seen the chairs that they have in Puttaparthi for Swami. They're pretty high. Swami needs the steps too. So this poor gentleman was sitting right at the very edge, and even then the tip of his toes were not touching the ground. And we were all seeing his discomfiture and having a good laugh. And Swami was at the back, and he walked around and he came. And as he came from the side of the stage, he saw this poor man's discomfort. And very sweetly he came up and walked up to Mr. Gokok, who was going to give an announcement, and very gently moved over to his chair and moved his step stool right under the governor's feet and asked him very gently to put his feet on the step stool. And then he turned around as though to talk to Professor Gokok, and you can imagine the Sevadal's situation. There were 25 of them running helter and skelter to find another step stool. And then they came running back with a step stool and put it back, one for Swami. And they bought a third one for Gokok, who did not need it, who then had to remove it because he was too tall. Be aware, be alert. Look around and see what you can do for others. And then Swami said, there is a third level of be aware and be alert. All the time, be aware of your thoughts. Be aware of the words you're using. Be aware of the actions that you're doing. Be aware, be alert of your thoughts, words and actions. If you follow this, he said, what's the rest of my name? We've just described Baba. Be aware, be alert. S-A-I. See Sai always in all, he said. If you do that, you're constantly aware of your thoughts, words and actions. If you're always lovingly looking everywhere to see what you can do to help others, and if you're always monitoring yourself, it's very easy to see Sai always in all. And that is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita, he said. So that's how my journey started with this name. But as I was growing up, Swami was there very easily available to us in our house. And I would see wondrous things that I thought was very normal, because he was there all the time and we could see. And one gentleman just outside was talking to me and requested me to narrate this particular incident. And this was the first one that happened to me that I realized that this was not just that wonderful Lord that came to our house and ate with us, sat with us. He even played snakes and ladders with us, my cousin and I. My cousin and I used to play snakes and ladders in the room, because we were all banished to the rooms when Swami came and stayed with us, because they didn't want any noise. You know, we adults do that to the children, right? Go away somewhere, don't make any noise. So my parents and all the aunts and uncles who would be there to look after Swami in our house would send us children away to the room. And my cousin and I would read books and sometimes play. And many times Swami would ask to join us. Can I play snakes and ladders with us, with you? For the first couple of times we said yes. The third time we said no, Swami. Why? Why can't I play? Because you don't play fair. You always win. You get all the numbers you want on that dice. So I remember once he said, no, I'll play like you people. And he rolled the dice and he went up a few ladders and did come down a few snakes. And then you come to number 98 and you know that long snake is waiting all the way from 98 to 2. So we are hoping he's going to go down. And he rolls the dice and of course he gets 2 and ends up on 100. We said, oh, we knew that. He said, no, I played fair. You all don't know how to play. But he just doesn't do anything just like that, isn't it? Swami yokka pratiyokka chupu mata aata paata swami varini chercho baata. My grandfather used to say, swami vari pratiyokka mata aata paata swami yokka vari chercho baata. They used to say, every word of Swami's, every song of Swami's, every look of Swami's, every play of Swami's is the path by which he will take you to him. So this snake and ladder game, he would say, see, if you hold on to the dice, the Lord's name, and roll it, you will go up the snakes, go up the ladders, come down the snakes. It's all a game. You will reach very safely to the end of your game. Life is a game. Play it. So he would come and he would be in our house, and sometimes there would be this snakes and ladders. We thought he was a part of our life, and he did some of these things which seemed a little unfair at that time. But it was really nice to have him around because he was materializing us some Paris chocolates and strawberries which we hadn't seen. So that's what we thought of him as children. It's really nice to have him because every time after the bhajan, if you sat very still in the bhajan and were really good, then at the end of the bhajan, he would usually materialize something for us for prasad. And the way he taught us concentration was he would tell us, children, just keep watching that photo, especially in Prashanthi Nilayam. Just keep watching that photo. So we would keep looking at Swami's photo, even though Swami was sitting right there, because we were expecting something to happen. And sure enough, when there was a Shiva bhajan being sung, the garland would unlatch itself and start doing the snake dance. The garland. If somebody was singing the Devi bhajan very devotedly, we would suddenly see kumkum come on the forehead of Swami's picture. So all of these things would be happening. So we thought Swami was generally there to entertain us and give us prasadam when we were young. And then suddenly, when I was about 7 or 8, there was an old aunt. This was the one that uncle over there at the back asked me to talk about. This lady I was talking about her yesterday. She was in Puttaparthi. She talked to Swami like a child, but knew that he was divine. She needed a cataract surgery and she came. I'm sorry, I know many of you may have heard this through Radio Sai and others, but somebody has requested me to tell this particular one. She used to come to Bangalore and she needed cataract surgery. So Swami sent her to Bangalore and said, go to Padmanabh's house and get your eye surgery done and come. So my father took her, she was an elderly lady, to the doctor, and doctor of course said that she needed surgery and the date was fixed. But she was very adamant. She said, oh, this doctor is going to make me blind. I need to go back to Puttaparthi and take Swami's blessings and vibhuti. He has not given me vibhuti. Whatever he gave is all over. And vibhuti at that time, according to us, was not vibhuti if it came in a packet. It had to come out of Swami's hands. So she said, I need the real vibhuti and everything. So my father, who was a busy dental surgeon, said, no, you can't go and make that hazardous journey all over again. He has already sent you with his blessings. Let's just go ahead with the surgery. So he refused to take her back. She was an elderly lady. She couldn't travel, obviously, this long journey by herself. So one evening, my parents had gone out somewhere and I was sitting with her in the living room. When the phone rang and I went and picked it up and I heard the operator. In those days, there were no direct calls. The operator saying, there is a call from Bukkapatnam. Somebody wants to talk to you. Is Dr. Padmanabhan there? And I said, no, this is the daughter. And they still gave the phone to whoever it was. And hello, I heard. And it was Swami's voice. Of course, I instantly recognized Swami's voice. And I was a little alert at hearing his voice. Geetamana, he asked. Is that Geetamma? He asked. I said, yes, Swami, I said. I was a little surprised. There was no telephone in Puttaparthi. So the phone call was coming from Bukkapatnam. So he said, is that old lady complaining? Because what had been happening was this lady was telling me the whole time about how these young people like your father, see, I'm an old woman, I want to go to Puttaparthi to get Swami's blessings, your dad is not taking me, and I was very gleefully listening to the complaints on my father. And she had been saying all that, so Swami came on the phone and said, is the old lady complaining? I didn't have the courage to say yes. So I was silent and he said, you give her the phone. So I called her and I said, Auntie, Swami is on the phone. Mama, Swami is on the phone. And she was old generation, never used the phone. So loudly, she thought Swami will hear from here to there loudly. Yoru, she said, who is this? No hello and all that. She didn't know English. So Swami said, this is Swami. Savitrakka, listen. You go and get your surgery done. My blessings are there. Don't give Padmanabh trouble to come back to Puttaparthi and all that. My blessings are there. You go. And immediately she launched into the complaint and said, no, Swami, he's not bringing me. And I want your blessings. This doctor will definitely make me blind. So much for her faith in doctors. But her faith in Swami was tremendous. So he said, no, nothing will happen. So she says to him on the phone, "Ah, doctor ko koncha buddhi appa." She says, give that doctor some buddhi to operate properly on. Because at this age, if I lose my eyesight, who will look after me other than you? He said, no, don't get worry. worried, get your surgery done. She didn't let him go. You see, when you love the Lord, you can ask with self-confidence and demand from Him. So sure of your faith in Him. She said, no, all these blessings is not enough. I don't have any vibhuti. I have to come to Puttaparthi. All the vibhuti you gave me when I came is over. So Swami said, you call that Gita again. So she said, go, he wants to talk to you. I think he'll tell you to tell your father to take me to Puttaparthi to get the vibhuti. So your father can't say no if Swami says. So I went there and again I said, hello. And Swami said, is there a piece of newspaper? Is there newspaper? He asked. I said, okay, this is strange. I said, yes, there is newspaper, Swami, right here. It was on the coffee table. He said, go and bring it. So I put the phone down and go and bring the newspaper. I said, okay, I have the newspaper. He said, put the phone down on it. I put the phone down on it. And through the receiver, there was a whooshing sound. And there was a mound of vibhuti on top of the newspaper. Mound of vibhuti. This, brothers and sisters, I tell my children who live in the US, for everything they will use the word awesome. The pizza was awesome. The ice cream was awesome. I say, use the word at the right place. This was awesome. So, 8-year-old and smart enough to know that the Bangalore telephones is not that efficient to deliver vibhuti through the telephone. So with shaky hands, even I know that this is something amazing that has happened. I pick it up and with kind of a broken voice saying, hello, vachinda, Swami asks, did you get it? The Lord who has sent it is asking me, did you get it? Yes, Swami, there is vibhuti on the paper. Huh? You fold it and give it to her. Let her go and have a surgery. Where are your parents? Swami, they have gone out. Tell Padmanabh, tell Kamalamma, my Ashirvadam is there with them. Tell them I bless them, he says. And the phone is put down. And you can imagine the excitement in our home. For the next many days, I became the heroine of the scene. All the relatives came. What happened? What happened? And repeatedly I repeated this story. And every time I was patted on my back, oh, what a wonderful experience you had. So this went on and I had a wonderful glowing time being the center of attraction for a few days. And then my grand aunt went and got her surgery done and came back. And then things calmed down and life went on. When I suddenly started to think, what is it that happened really after all the excitement had calmed down? What is it that happened? What brought him? I knew the journey to Puttaparthi. I knew how long it took him from Prashanthi Nilayam to Bukkapatnam. Because an old lady, an illiterate old lady, all she had was her faith and devotion for Swami. That's all she had. She didn't have much money. She didn't have much knowledge. But she had the weapon of love in her hands. And with that she said, I have nobody but you, Swami. I want to come and see you. I want your blessings. I have nobody. I only have you. And what did this Lord do? He crossed the Chitravati river walking, came in a bullock cart to Bukkapatnam, went to the single telephone that was there in the post office in Bukkapatnam, and from that post office called this old lady and delivered her vibhuti to her. What was it that drew him? I questioned. And I knew that it was her faith and her love. The two ingredients we need if we want him by our side. Faith and love. Faith and love. You can call love devotion. Love towards God is what we call it as devotion. And she went through her surgery. So that was my first awesome experience that I actually understood what divine love was. Till that time, He was the Lord who came and played snakes and ladders but one. He was the Lord who gave us nice chocolates at the end of the bhajan. But there was something about Him that we never felt like leaving His side. We always wanted to be with Him when He was there. But this incident changed my life. I started to really listen to what He said. Till then I used to just hear. I used to sit in the front row and hear what He said. But then I started to listen. And that was the Swami that first impressed upon my heart. I must have been 7 or 8. And after that, I would all the time be alert and be aware of His presence and try to listen to what He said.
You are listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We will now continue with the talk by Mrs. Gita Mohan Ram on the topic, The Swami I Grew Up With.
I want to tell you a newer incident. A few years ago, I went to a mini retreat in Atlanta, in the US, a few years ago. And there were some Swami college students there who had invited me to speak there. It was on a Saturday. It was actually Easter. So it was the Saturday after Good Friday. And I gave a talk there. I had a wonderful time. They had a lovely program that they had planned. And I gave a talk in the morning and I gave a talk in the evening. And after my talk was over, there was a African couple, I didn't know they were African, they were just an African-American couple standing and waiting to talk to me, but there were a large group of people surrounding me and I knew they were waiting because they were waiting there for a long time and I kept sort of moving forward but everybody was coming there and taking pictures and so on. And finally after almost half an hour of them waiting and I was feeling really uncomfortable that I hadn't talked to them yet, I finally went up to them. And I said, I'm sorry, Sai Ram, I see that you were waiting to talk to me. It took me a while to get to you. And they started to talk to me in a language that I didn't understand. I didn't even know which language they were talking. And I said, I'm really sorry, I don't understand what you're saying. Let me call somebody, maybe someone else will know. But they continued to talk to me and they really had a baffled look on their face. And I kept saying, gesturing to them, saying, I can't understand. By which time I called one of the brothers over there and said, can you talk to them? I don't know what they are saying. And they're really telling me something intensely. So they spoke something and then they said, oh, wait, we know somebody who knows French. Let me, they were speaking in French, which I didn't even know at that time. So they came forward and then they talked to them. And they came and they said, Geeta, they are just saying that they really enjoyed your talk a lot. I said, oh, please tell them. I said, thank you. Because they were speaking in French and I couldn't understand what they were saying. But I thought that they probably didn't know how to speak in English, but they could understand English. A lot of us are like that. I grew up in the South. I can understand Hindi very well, but I'm not very confident in speaking the language. So I thought that may be the case. So I said, please tell them. I said, thank you. They said, no, no, they want you to talk to them. So I said, okay, I'll talk to them. Maybe you can translate for me. They said, no, they want you to talk in French. I said, I'm really sorry. I don't know how to speak in French. So then they said, how is that possible? She just spoke the whole 1.5 hours in the morning and 1.5 hours in the evening in French. So then, of course, the poor brother was taken aback and said, no, she didn't speak in French. She spoke in English. Finally, they said, where are you from? And they said, we have just moved to the U.S. and we attended one or two Sai centers, but we couldn't understand anything because we don't know English. We are still settling down. But we have felt very bad that we are not doing any of the Sai activities that we used to participate in. Not only that, we used to love the bhajans, but most of our bhajans used to be in our language. But here everything is in either Hindi or Sanskrit or English and we don't understand. So we had stopped going to the Sai center. And suddenly, last week, one of our friends said, there is a program going on in Atlanta, which was about an hour for them, drive. And there is a lady speaking there, why don't you go to her talk? And these people told their friends, what's the point, we won't understand, it'll be in English. They said, so what, you know, it'll be bhajans, there'll be Swami's picture, the whole atmosphere will be filled with love for Swami. You can enjoy that because you're missing your center so much since you moved from Congo. So they had come to the program and they had sat there and of course they heard the bhajans and they thought, okay, maybe we'll just stay for the bhajans and leave because it's an all-day program and we won't understand anything. And then I got up to speak, they said. This was all being translated to me. And said, this lady stood up and she spoke in French. We were so thankful to Swami because we had been missing him so much ever since we left our country. We've been wanting to hear his glory and his stories. We missed our friends, we missed his bhajans, we missed everything about him. And here was this lady. So finally I said, you know, I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm glad you understood. And I was still, you know, the minds play such a bad trick on us sometimes. I was thinking, these people must be really off. Because I don't know what they're talking about. I said something and they think they heard it. Well, if that's the case, so be it. Why entertain negative thoughts? And they did say that, no, they repeated the stories that I had said. I told them about the roses, I told them about the cutting of the grass. And they said, no, we understood everything. So finally we all gave up trying to understand them. We said, okay, thank you very much, goodbye, and we left. And we all came back to the host's house where I was staying, a Sai devotee. And everybody was talking about this amazing thing that had happened. And everybody was kind of laughing a little bit, a little doubtful at what had happened. No, they must have understood English. They think, you know, that because they are French, they think that you've spoken in French. So we all just discussed it for a bit and left it at that. We never thought of it as something miraculous. This happened in April during Good Friday, the Saturday after, and then in July I went to India and Swami graciously, with his infinite love for all the challenges still that we face in our own personal sadhana, he still keeps forgiving. He called us for an interview. And as soon as I sat down, there was another group of people along with us in the interview room. He introduced me to them and them to us. And then as he sat down, he said, where have you been speaking? So I told him, I had gone to a couple of places. So I told him the names of the places that I had gone to. And he said, yes, yes, nowadays you're becoming very famous. You're talking in French also. You're talking in French also. I looked a little shocked and he said, why? Do you think you are speaking? Every person who hears, whoever speaks, whether it is Dr. Reddy speaking, Brother Anupam speaking, whoever it may be, I am the one within them that hears and translates it to their brain so that they get the message that I want them to hear. Isn't that amazing? What a Lord. What a Lord. We are so fortunate. And then he surprised me and said, you don't know this, but it happened to a couple when you spoke in Bath. They thought you were speaking in Russian. Swami told me. This is the Lord that I grew up with. He can play jokes, but even in the jokes, there is such a tremendous, powerful message. That is why Dr. Eddie was saying that let us not think that we do anything at all. We are very fortunate that he thinks that even for a moment that he can use us to do his work. We are just very fortunate that he thinks we are deserving of his grace to do his work. That we deserve that grace. We must have done something good sometime before. Our ancestors must have done something good. So this was this Swami that I grew up. He played jokes. He continued to play jokes. He always treated me like a child. You see that I moved away from this podium. I have to tell you this. It's tempting. Out of the blue, when I went for Swami's 80th birthday, Swami, I had gone in July to Vrindavan. Swami was there in Vrindavan at that time. And very sweetly in the interview room, he asked, "Birthday kostunnava?" He asked, "Are you coming for birthday?" This was in July. For several years, I had stopped going to all the major festivals because I felt that I had to see Swami from a distance, and we spent more time looking at all the cultural events than Swami. That is how I felt. So Swami wanted to remove that feeling in me, I suppose. So he asked, "Are you coming for birthday?" I didn't have the courage to tell him, "Swami, I don't want to come and listen to all the music programs." So I said, "If you want me to come, I will come, Swami," he said. "Vaste anandanga untundi," he said. "If you come, it will make me very happy." So I said, "I will come." So I came back to the US. I was a teacher. I just stopped working a few years ago. But I used to teach kindergarten in a private school. So I came back in September. In the fall, the school session starts. So I spoke to my director as soon as the school started on the first day. And I told her that in November, during the Thanksgiving holidays, which is usually when Swami's birthday comes, I want to go to India again. She said, "I thought you just went to India." I said, "Yes, but I will need a week's vacation." She said, "Geeta, you know that at that time of the year, we don't sanction any vacation for anybody because it's a difficult time of the year. A lot of people are taking off because Christmas is drawing near. You know that." I said, "Please think about it." I had worked for 17 years in that school. So I said, "Please think about it. I just need a week." She said, "No, I just cannot give it to you because if I give one person vacation at that time, it will become a habit and all the other teachers will ask and I cannot do that." So I said, "I will work for this month of September and I will resign from the 1st of October." She said, "What? You're going to resign because I will not give you a week's vacation?" I said, "I cannot explain and you will not understand. This is a personal matter. I have to go to India. So if you cannot give it to me, unfortunately, I will have to quit because I had decided to quit since Swami had asked me to come for the birthday." So after a couple of weeks, she came back to me and she said, no, you cannot leave. You take the week. Why a week? Take 2 weeks," she said. So I got my vacation to go to Swami's 80th birthday. I arrived in Puttaparthi and I got a message from somebody in the next room and said, "The organizers have been asking if Geeta Ram has arrived yet." I said, "Why are the organizers asking for me?" They said, "I don't know. They asked just you to go and meet Mrs. Chetana Raju, who was organizing some things." So I went to her room because I had brought a parcel for her from somebody from US and I thought she had wanted that. So I went there on the 17th night, I think. And she, as soon as I went, "I'm sorry, I just came today. Here is the package I believe you had sent to her." She said, no, I wasn't asking for any package. Come here, I want to talk to you." So I went inside her room and she said, "Geeta, on the night." And remember, I had not gone to Swami's birthday celebrations for some years. So I hadn't quite registered in my head that 19th was Ladies Day. So she said, "Tomorrow," so it was on the 18th. So she said, "Tomorrow we want you to speak," she said. So I said, "Okay, where do you want me to?" So in my head, I'm thinking, you know, they used to have those sessions on the Punjabi canteen for foreigners who would come to India to talk about Swami. So I thought maybe that. So I said, "Where?" She said, "In the morning." I said, "Oh, in the morning there is going to be all the functions, is it not? You mean in the Punjabi canteen in the evening?" She said, no, I'm not talking about the Punjabi canteen. I'm talking about speaking in the Kulwant Hall on 19th morning. I said, who? Me? She said, yes. I'm asking you to speak for the Ladies' Day program. And I just got completely shaky. I said, no, no, I cannot speak. She said, no, I showed a list of speakers to Swami. And Swami said, Geeta is coming, ask her to speak. We didn't have your name on the list, so he has asked you to speak. I said, please tell him I haven't come. She said, no, there's no question, it's already 8:30 in the night tomorrow morning. So I came back to my room, my husband hadn't come, I called him up in the US, and all night long I was just petrified. I have given so many talks. I have spoken in front of Swami, but they were all very specific topics that were given to me in education and human values or Balavikas training, which I would read out of his Satya Sai speaks and come and convey to people. This was something completely different, and I was very worried. And Swami had very clearly told me not to prepare, so I was not to prepare. And my father said, look, this is not just going and standing somewhere and giving a talk. You better prepare. There are going to be hundreds of people there for Swami's 80th birthday. You can't just go there and say, Swami is going to talk through me. You better prepare and do your homework. I said, no, I don't want to do that. So anyway, all night long, I kept thinking, what should I say? What should I say? What should I say? And finally, it was in the morning, and I still didn't know what I was going to say. Then they had told us to come there at 6:30. Because they wanted to show us where we were to stand and this and that. So I arrived there, they gave me this badge, and then we were taken on the side, and they told us that everybody go stand near the mic, the boys are going to just see what height you are, so that they can set it up really quickly when you go and speak. And of course they gave us a lot of instructions, put your head down, walk like this, pull your head down, and I said, okay. So, because, you know, this was all the men on the veranda. So we were only two women going up there with all the men sitting in the veranda. So this made me even more nervous. I really thought that I would not be able to walk up those seven steps or whatever it was and go there and stand. And then I came and stood behind the podium. The podium was very tall. And I stood behind, they were trying to adjust the mic, and the mic was banging onto the podium because I was so short. And the podium was very tall, and it sounded like an Ashari Ravani, you know, they say, the voice without the body. Because nobody could see me, it was just my voice. So the college boys said, Auntie, don't worry, by the time it's your turn to talk, we will put a little stool on which you can stand up. I said, okay, because otherwise people will really think it's a miracle that a voice is coming from behind the podium. So I came and sat down, and then I was sitting there, and for the first time, I mean, I've been sitting in the front in the first or the second row where all the women sit, but for Swami's birthday, you know, they put a lot of chairs for the VIPs and the wives of the office bearers and the office bearers who are ladies. So there are a lot of chairs in the front where I have never sat because I'm not an office bearer. Now on that day, because I was going to speak, I was asked to sit on the first chair of the five chairs that they had. And then there were other VIP ladies coming and sitting next to me. Nobody had seen me because I don't attend these functions and I haven't played an important role as an office bearer anywhere. So there was this one very famous musician who came and sat next to me. I knew who she was. She didn't know who I was. So she saw and she looked at me and she was probably wondering who I was because I was in a seat that I shouldn't have been in on the first chair. So she looked at me and then after a few minutes her curiosity took over and she said, Sai Ram, where are you from? So I said, from the US, and I was quiet. And after a little while, she said, Central Trust member? I said, no. Then she said, wife of a Central Trust member? I said, no. At this point, I was having a good time. Because she wanted to know who I was and I wasn't going to tell her. And she was wondering, who is this woman sitting in chair number one? That was because I was the first speaker, second speaker, but the first speaker had decided to sit somewhere else. And I was having a good time. I mean, I knew she was so curious. Who is this lady that I don't recognize, who's never here at any festival, I don't know. So then she said, a big donor? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm a kindergarten teacher. I make minimum wage. I said, no. Prashanti Council? I said, no. And at that point, I think she kind of got irritated because I wasn't offering any information. And she just said very quietly. I knew who she was. And I said, I know. I love your music. So she was even more irritated because I knew who she was. I've heard your music and I have your CDs. So that was the conversation, and it ended. The other ladies came, and then the Vedam and the band and the music, and you know, the Swami loves all the noise to happen at once. So it started, and the minute it started, I knew Swami had come out and he was going to start coming, and my heart started to pound. And I said, oh my goodness, I have to speak. I have to speak, and I've been bothering this lady. He's going to get really mad, and I'm going to stand there and I'm going to look like a fool in a few minutes. And Swami came very nicely in all his glory on his birthday, came and sat on his chair, and the program started. Chetana Raju spoke, and then the other lady spoke, and then they called out my name, and then I went up, and as I walked to Swami's chair, I passed the podium. They had given me a rose to give Swami. I gave it to him. Em matlaartao? Swami asked, what are you going to speak? So luckily, having spent this many years with him, I didn't say I was going to say this or that. Meer em matlaadamante adi matlaartaanu. I said, whatever you ask me to speak, I will speak, I said. He said, oh. And then he said, okay, talk about the milk boxes and the lady in New York, he said. I said, okay, Swami. I gave him the rose. My heart was pounding. I bent down to touch his feet. He put his hand on my forehead, and immediately my heart rate went down. I felt absolutely normal, as comfortable as I am with you now, brothers and sisters. Dhairyanga matladu, he said. Speak courageously. Speak courageously, he said. And then I turned and I saw that stool that I was promised. It was a plastic stool, 6 inches or 7 inches diameter, and on that was a little rug. And immediately I started to think, how much do I weigh? Because if that plastic stool collapses, we're really going to have entertainment for Swami's 80th birthday. And I turned and my eyes were wide and I looked at Swami. My heart was, please don't punish me for my fun with that lady. I looked at him. Parvaledi ekku, he said. It's okay, climb, he said. I just looked at him. It's okay, climb. He was having fun too. Nothing will happen, climb. So I went and climbed on that stool and I spoke about the two incidents that Swami asked me to speak. Maybe I should tell you those two incidents. You know, this is the fun thing with Swami. You think of something that you want to, maybe people will want, and then he makes you go in a different way. Well, there were two incidents, which were wondrous incidents in my life. I told you I was a child for Swami. I grew up, I sat on his lap, I ate, I slept, I went with him wherever he went, till I was 12 or 13, as Dr. Reddy was saying. And after that, having been born as a woman, my rides in the car with him stopped. My brother had the wonderful privilege to continue to do that and drive all Swami's cars, but that privilege stopped for me, the physically traveling in the car. But I had many, many wonderful trips with Swami all over. I went with him to Anantapur when the college was being built. He was so sweet. He's told the ladies who had set up the table and everything for Swami to eat. He said, feed her first. She came directly from Vrindavan. She's a small child. She hasn't eaten. And Swami made sure I was eat. Then he came, took the plate that they had kept for him on the table and started to serve the food that they had kept for Swami on his table. Started to serve it. And then he handed the plate to me. I was 11 years old. I said, no, no, Swami, you have. And those ladies who had brought the food were really giving me tough looks, you know. Because they had brought food for Swami. And here was Swami in a silver plate putting all the food and giving it to me. And then he skipped a few dishes. And he said, don't think I don't want to give it to you. I'm just keeping it for myself. Those dishes have garlic, he said. I'm just not serving it because you're allergic to it. So he That's how he looked after me. I grew up like that with a lot of love and shelter from him. And then he got me married to Mohan. I didn't know his name. I didn't know what his education was. I didn't know where he was from. He told me, "You're marrying him," and I married him. I'll come back to that story. I'm not forgetting, but... So I got married to Mohan. We'll put that on the back burner for now, since I said. I had my children, my twin sons, and when they were about 2 or 3 months Swami named them when they were 3 months, and then when about they were 8 or 9 months old, the Glaxo factory that manufactured the formula for the babies went on strike, and there was no Glaxo available anywhere in India. I was in India at that time. And Swami had told me when he had named them, "Don't worry about the boys. I will look after them as though they were my own babies." So I was never worried. But then what happened, as the days went by, it was very, very difficult to get formula. They were allergic to the cow's milk that was available, and the Glaxo was not available anywhere all over India. So all over the place, we had to ask people to buy it for us and bring it, because they had rationed it. The pharmacies would sell only one box of Glaxo. And my husband, who is very, very strict about following the right thing, my father, who was a doctor, knew many pharmacists, and he would say to me, "Do you want me to talk to some pharmacies and get you some?" And he would tell me, "No. What about all the people who don't have the influence? What about all the mothers who don't know other pharmacists? You better stand in the line and get it from this pharmacy, one box at a time." So he was very strict, and slowly my 6 or 7 Glaxo, and with twin children it was getting over really fast, was coming down to one. And one particular Saturday I was very, very upset. And as a mother, I was very nervous that I wouldn't be able to feed the babies. I went into the prayer room and I said, "You know what, Swami? You said you would look after these babies. You're too busy in the veranda talking to those college boys. You're not listening to my prayers, are you? What am I going to do? You got me married to this man who will not move even this much. So what am I supposed to do?" This was like a regular conversation that I had with her. I came out, and then my husband, who probably heard my moaning and groaning, said, "Look, there is a new pharmacy that has opened in the north of Bangalore. I will go and try to see if they'll give an extra box or so and bring it." So he left. We didn't even have a car then. He had a little scooter. So he went away, and on the way back, he picked up 2 cans of Glaxo, and he was coming to the middle of Bangalore city. There is a town hall there, and he stopped at the traffic light, and there was a car that also stopped at the traffic light, and when it turned green, the car wouldn't start. It broke down. So the elderly gentleman who was in the car asked my husband to help him to push the car to the side. So my husband, who was young, parked his scooter and pushed the car, and as he pushed the car, the gentleman asked him, "In which direction are you headed?" My husband said, "I'm going to Jayanagar," which is the suburb in Bangalore. So the man said, "Oh, I had some really urgent delivery to be done in Jayanagar. Can you please go and give it to this person, because it's urgent? My car has broken down and I won't be able to do it." So my husband said, "Well, if you trust me and give me your package, I'll be happy to deliver it." So the man wrote down the address and my husband took it from him. The policeman came and said, "You people can't stand here in the middle of the street and have a conversation." So he didn't look at the address. He just took it, put it in his pocket. The man gave him a carton, which he tied to the back seat of his scooter with a string, and he left. And as he entered Jayanagar, he took out the piece of paper to see the address so he could deliver this box. It was quite a heavy box. He looked at it, and on that piece of paper was my name and our home address. So he said, "What? I must have lost the paper," and looked in his pocket, but that was the only paper written in pencil. So he took it out and read again, and he came home with this carton tied to the back, and he rang the bell. I opened the door, and my first question was, "Did you get the Glaxo?" He said, "Yes, I got 2 cans, but were you expecting some sort of a package?" I said, "No, I wasn't expecting. Did you get the Glaxo?" He said, "Yes, but you know," he came upstairs with this heavy box and put it down, and he said, "Call your mother. What is this big box? Some strange gentleman near the traffic light gave me this," and he told me the whole story. So I called my mother, and she said, "No, I haven't sent anything, and even if I did, why would I send it with some stranger? I would have sent it with our driver, or I would have called you." And she said, "Then I looked at the box, and on the sides of the box was my name." So she said, "Well, then open it if it has your name and your address." So we cut, you know, it was an old cardboard box tied with this jute string, you know. And we cut it and we opened the box and there were 12 boxes of Glaxo, 12 cartons of Glaxo inside. It was so heavy. You cannot believe the sense of gratitude and sense of shame I felt for having questioned his commitment to his devotees. So, the following weekend, my husband and I, we went to Puttaparthi with the babies who were 9 months along with my mother. It was the old days of the sandy Puttaparthi, where there was the circle in the middle and we were sitting on the sand with the two babies on our lap, and Swami came out at 4 o'clock for darshan, and as he started to walk towards me, I was just crying with the baby in my lap and my mother had the other baby. And as he came, he materialized some vibhuti and put it on the babies that I held up and put it on my forehead, and I just took a quick pada namaskar, just bending over, and he walked away. And as he walked away, I said to my mother, oh my goodness, I didn't even tell him thank you for those Glaxo. And I said, why didn't you remind me? And she said, why didn't you say something? So mother and daughter discussion was going, and Swami walked all the way and came back and said, pillaluk paal dorkinda, did the babies get the milk? He said. The next morning I went, he called us for an interview, and he said, when there is a devotee who prays and surrenders to me, and when there is a dharmic husband, why would I not protect that family? Why would I not protect that family? That was the story that Swami wanted me to say. And then I should tell the story of the lady in New York, and I'll just take 2 minutes. I don't like to go over my time. I know there are other programs scheduled. We were in New York for our 25th wedding anniversary, and we had decided to go to a Broadway show there. And because it was our anniversary, we had gone to the temple in the morning, and we went to the program in the evening. This is in December. In July, I had gone to Puttaparthi. My husband had not come. Swami had given some vibhuti, and he had said, take it to the U.S. So I thought that he was giving it for my husband, who had not accompanied me. So I put it in my purse very carefully in the middle and zippered it up and came back to the U.S. But when I opened my purse, it was missing. The vibhuti was not there. And he was quite sad that he had missed the interview as well as the vibhuti that I had lost. And I really apologized and I said, I don't know what happened. I must have dropped it somewhere. Swami had very lovingly folded it, taken my wrist, tapped it, put the vibhuti back into the piece of paper, folded it and given it to me very lovingly, saying, take it to USA with you. Now in December we had gone for the program, and in the middle of the program I went to the ladies' washroom, and as I was standing there, there was a Hispanic lady who was cleaning the bathroom, and she kept looking at me, and I thought she was looking at me because I was wearing Indian clothes. And then she came to me and with not very good English said, you from India? I said, yes. And I started to wash my hands. Then again she said, she kept looking at me, and then, you know how you feel uncomfortable when somebody is staring at you. Then she said, you know Sai Baba? She asked. I said, yes. Do you know him? She said, no, I don't know who Sai Baba is. But you know, my daughter is very, very sick. She's 8 years old. She needs a kidney transplant. And I have been praying to my Lord Jesus every day. I have been praying and praying. I have no money for the surgery. I have no medical insurance. I have been praying every day, but Jesus has not taken pity on me. But 4 days ago, I had this man with the curly hair come in my dream, and he said, ask for booty. I said, who are you? He said, I am Sai Baba. There is a lady, Indian lady, coming to your work. You ask for booty, she said. I said, vibhuti? She said, yes, yes. So she said, in my dream, I said, what is booty? He said, it's white powder. You give it to your daughter. You ask the Indian lady. So I woke up in the morning, she said, and I thought it was some strange dream. Who is this man? Who is this man with curly hair? What is this white powder? All this, some nonsense, some tricks that my mind is playing. And she said, for the past 4 days, I have been having the same dream telling me over and over again. There was no Indian lady here. This is where I work. Every day it's the same dream, to the point when I'm getting really a little agitated. But today I see you, so I ask you, are you India? And you say yes. I ask you, you know Sai Baba? You say yes. You have booty for me? So I said, yes, Vibhuti. I usually have some packets in my purse. So I said, let me take a quick look. I hope I have one. Oh, Swami, please, I hope I have one. I opened my purse and right on top of my wallet is sitting that lovingly folded Vibhuti packet that Swami had given me in July, that I, with my attachment, thought it was for my husband. But he had very lovingly said, take it to USA. He didn't say, give it to Mohan Ram. At least I felt a little good about that, because my husband had been quite upset with me for losing it. I said, here it is. I knew immediately it was meant for this woman. I said, here it is. Take it. I hope your daughter feels better. The program finished. On the way home, I told my husband what had happened. And he, being the practical engineer that he is, he said, did you get her name and telephone number? We know so many doctors in New York. Maybe somebody could help her. I said, the doctor of doctors has already sent her the medicine. I'm not going to worry about it. I came home, and from December on, that day on, I prayed for this child who needed kidney transplant, and the woman had said she had no money for the surgery. I prayed, and you know, the mundane life takes over, and after a few months, I probably stopped doing that too, and I forgot. I went back in July the following year to Puttaparthi. As soon as I walked into the interview room, this wonderful divine Lord said, no transplant necessary. Ammai bagun. Papa bagun. That's all. The first sentence, as soon as he closed the door, the girl is well. She didn't need a transplant. Dear brothers and sisters, we are just here. Whether we are deserving or not, he has chosen us to do something through us, so that we may enjoy his glory. Sai Ram, and thank you for my opportunity to talk.
I'm sitting on sunshine, high above the clouds today. Hey, hey, oh, yeah. And everything is more than fine. I can see 4 miles today. Oh, yeah. Hey, hey, everybody knows that the more you love, the more it flows. So give angel wings to your heart. That's where you start. The love flies back to you, yeah. I close my outer eyes and open to the inner way of seeing. And nothing I see is mine. I'm free to fly in the lightness of being. Shows. So give angel wings to your heart. That's where you start. The love flies back to you, yeah. Let your love shine down on me, yeah. The love flies back to you, yeah. It's time to dance around the world. Thank you.
See you. Really wanna see you.